Hello, this is Terry Burdick reading to you today from the Danville Commercial News, the weekend edition for Saturday, May 23rd and Sunday, May 24th. Happy Memorial Weekend, everyone. We'll start today on the first page with the headline, Home Sweet Home. Habitat for Humanity finishes house for Army veteran. And this comes to us from reporter Christy Jankowski, Dateline Danville. This Memorial Day weekend, veteran Mark Whaling will have a place he can call his own, thanks to the Habitat of Humanity of Danville. It's going to be the first time I've actually owned a house. I've been renting ever since I got out of the service, Whaling said. So this is a big step for me. I finally get to grow up, time to moment. Whaling, a military veteran with the United States Army who served from 1989 to 1992, starting as a cable systems installer maintainer with 31 Lima, and serving with the military police, serving overseas in Germany, Whaling also said he suffers from PTSD. And now he is the recipient of a three-bedroom, two-bath ranch-style home built by the Habitat for Humanity of Danville. Whaling moved to Danville almost a decade and a half ago from the suburbs of Chicago to be closer to family after his brother moved to the area. I decided, you know what, it's time for me to move. So I packed everything up, came down here, Whaling said, calling Danville his new adopted home. He adds that he loves the people of Danville. It's the people, how genuine they are as to why he stayed. People don't realize we might not have all the name brand or big stores, but we've got a state park, Whaling said about Vermilion County. We have lakes and rivers. There's a lot to do if you like the outdoors. Whaling says he's beyond thankful for the opportunity. The community outpouring on this has been so huge, Whaling said. Thank you. I've been saying that since day one. Thank you is not enough. And he wants to give back to those who helped. For the people that helped build this house, I ordered some 250th anniversary challenge coins, and those are going to be handed out to people who helped actually physically build the house, Whaling said. He added he wants to help the organization with projects once he's moved in. The nonprofit broke ground on the home back in August, moving Whaling almost to tears during the ceremony. Words can't say enough how I feel at this moment, said Whaling before the first shovel hit the ground. Thank you and bless, God bless. He had a few plans for when he gets settled in his home. Once I get moved in here, maybe next year, plant a garden because I like fresh vegetables, Whaling said. I had a service dog, but I lost it almost 3 years ago. So I'm looking to get a young dog so I can train it to be my new service dog. Whaling has many positive things to say about the nonprofit and wants others to know what the group does and how they may help them. Habitat for Humanity, without them, a lot of veterans and people that normally cannot get into a home now have the opportunity to get into homes, and a lot of people don't realize that this is available to them, Whaling said. And that's what their resale shop does here in town, support building houses. Whaling added to the organization, helped one of his friends when his house fell into disrepair, and they've helped others install ramps at their homes. This is the first home Habitat has been able to build in a decade, which Executive Director Ryan Campbell says is thanks to contributions to the Restore, which supports their mission. Campbell added that the lot was donated at the request of building a home for a military veteran. Dana Rowland, Vermilion Advantage Chamber of Commerce Director, present during the dedication ceremony, says Whaling is deserving of receiving the home. Vermilion Advantage was honored to be there at the groundbreaking, and it is incredibly special to now see this home become a reality, Rowland said. This project reflects the very best of our community, people and organizations coming together to support someone so deserving. We are especially proud to help welcome a veteran into a home built with care, generosity, and community spirit. It's a testament to what can be accomplished when we work together. To find out how to volunteer with Habitat for Humanity of Danville, donate or apply for a home, go to habitatdanville.org. Our next front page story comes in the police category. Jackson found guilty of murder, and this too comes to us from Christy Jankowski. Quartz Jackson, 27, of Danville, was found guilty of first-degree murder by a jury from a December 21, 2024 shooting of Joseph Jones. According to a release from Vermilion County State's Attorney Jacqueline Lacey, the trial against Jackson lasted 4 days. Today's verdict delivers justice for the victim and sends a clear message that violence and intimidation will not obstruct the truth, Lacey said. The defendant not only carried out a murder by shooting this victim multiple times, but also attempted to manipulate the investigation by threatening and intimidating witnesses to control the narrative. In an initial report, Danville Police Department officers were called to the area of Collette and William Street around 11 p.m. on December 21, 2024, and found an unresponsive individual lying on the ground near the intersection. Officers immediately began administering first aid until paramedics arrived. The individual, identified as Jones, 35 of Champaign, was pronounced dead at the scene. DPD officials said when officers arrived, they heard shots being fired in the same area. According to a release from State's Attorney, Jackson got out of a white sedan and shot the victim multiple times and then returned to the sedan's back seat and the vehicle sped away from the scene. Lacey says the victim was heard calling for help, and during that time witnesses reported to Danville police that the sedan returned to the scene, and witnesses said the shooter was seen running away from the area on foot after more shots were fired. The state says nearby surveillance cameras captured the sedan leaving and returning and leaving once again, matching the witness's recall of the deadly event. Those witness statements led to the arrest of an individual, but those charges were later dismissed. Detective Zane Raining with the Danville Police Department was able to use DNA evidence and cell phone data extraction that led police to the arrest of the actual shooter, Jackson. Court records show Jackson was arrested for murder on January 17, 2025. Forensic analyst John Fender with DPD collected the data used in this case from cell phones, which gave them highly detailed reports to show where Jackson was at the time of the shooting. Further analysis by the Illinois State Police Crime Lab found Jackson's DNA on the shell casings investigators found. Furthermore, the firearms identification section of the ISP Crime Lab also was able to identify that the 40 caliber shell casings collected at the scene matched those at another crime scene Jackson was involved with, where gunfire was reportedly exchanged. Lacey thanked the jurors in the trial for their attention to detail and thanked the Vermilion County Sheriff's Office for their assistance as well. Thanks to the courage of witnesses who ultimately came forward with the truth, along with the tireless work of members of the Danville Police Department, the jurors were able to find the defendant guilty of first-degree murder, Lacey added. My office remains committed to holding violent offenders fully accountable and to protecting all citizens of Vermilion County. The case was prosecuted by Lacey's office, as well as Assistant State's Attorneys Daniel Reynolds and Jake Klein, with Judge Mark S. Goodwin presiding over the trial. Jackson's next court date is on June 12th at the Vermilion County Courthouse. In more front page news, body discovered during demolition. Vermilion County Coroner Jane McFadden confirms that officials found a deceased individual at a demolition site on Thursday. In a news release, McFadden identifies the individual as Sean A. Williams, 49, of Danville. It also states it appears that his remains had been there for some time. The Danville Police Department and the Vermilion County Sheriff's Office are investigating the discovery of the deceased individual found during the demolition of 128 North Walnut Street. The autopsy of Williams has been completed, according to McFadden, and the results are pending. Danville Department Chief Doug Miller issued a media release Friday following the discovery around 12:36 p.m. on Thursday. Officers found the deceased individual at the former Studio 25 during the building's demolition, one of many the city is currently undertaking. Miller said once officers arrived, they located the body of the person, then contacted Vermilion County Coroner, and the person was pronounced deceased at the site. The identity of this person is not being revealed at this time until confirmation and notification of the person's family are made. Officials say this is an open investigation and further details will be released as they become available, but there is no reason to believe that there's an ongoing threat to the public. Anyone with information is encouraged to contact the Danville Police Department or Vermilion County Crime Stoppers. In more local news, Aarons announces his run for mayor. Ward 7 Alderman Doug Aarons, who was born and raised in Danville, announced on Thursday at Temple Plaza that he plans to run for mayor of Danville. Aarons, a graduate of Schlarman and the former Danville Director of Public Works, indicated that he wants to get the community more involved in city government, including allowing the public more than 3 minutes per person during audience comment time at city council meetings. He's the fourth official candidate to announce that announces plans for running for mayor, joining Frank McCullough, Tricia Teague, and Dennis Witzman. Well, some news for the Indiana contingency of our listeners. Governor Braun may extend gas tax suspension again, and this comes to us from Casey Smith of the Indiana Capital Chronicle. Hoosier motorists could continue getting a break on state gas tax beyond early June after Governor Mike Braun said Friday that he could have the authority to extend his tax suspension under Indiana's energy emergency law. Braun said that he plans to revisit an extension in the days before the current suspension is scheduled to end on June 7th. I'll be looking at that, Braun said during a news conference. It does, yes, look like there might be flexibility to continue it. Braun's first suspended the state's gasoline use tax, effectively the state's 7% sales tax collected on gasoline, through an April 8th executive order tied to rising fuel prices. He later expanded the relief through the second executive order issued May 6th that also suspended Indiana's 36 cents a gallon gasoline excise tax. Together, the two suspensions currently total roughly 59 cents per gallon in state taxes. I don't think I've ever seen in my career where a state's gone or foregone both a use tax or sales tax and the excise tax itself, Patrick DeHaan, head of petroleum analysis for Gas Buddy, told the Indiana Capital Chronicle. A notice from the Indiana Department of Revenue this week showed that the gasoline use tax for June would otherwise rise to 26.5 cents per gallon, up from 23.3 cents in May. Indiana's average gasoline price on Friday was $4 a gallon, compared to the national average of $4.55, according to AAA's tracking. The state average was $2.68 in late February, before Donald Trump launched the war with Iran that prompted a worldwide spike in oil prices. Braun said Friday that he expects to make a decision shortly before the current suspension expires. We'll be in good shape here, the governor said, so I'll be looking at that again that week before it's due to expire. Savings at the pump. Fuel market analysts say the tax suspensions appear to have given a noticeable effect on Indiana gasoline prices. DeHaan said comparisons with neighboring states suggest most of the tax savings are now reaching consumers. Indiana is about 63 cents lower than Michigan and 66 cents lower than Ohio, he said. I would estimate probably north of even 85% of the drop has been passed along. DeHaan said Indiana's prices have diverged sharply from neighboring states in recent weeks, even as the broader Midwest fuel market has faced refinery disruptions and volatile oil prices. Indiana has not seen prices go up since May 1st, he said. You're clearly seeing a substantial part of the gas tax relief being passed along. But he warned that motorists could see a rapid jump in those prices if those suspensions end next month. If the suspension expires, your prices are going to dramatically climb, probably within 12 hours of it coming back into play, DeHaan said, estimating prices could rise by more than 60 cents a gallon relatively quickly once taxes resume. DeHaan said most of the tax reductions have likely already been reflected in pump prices, meaning future price movements would increasingly depend on oil markets rather than additional effects from the suspensions themselves. We're approaching the midpoint part of our time together, so let's take a break and take a look at the obituaries that were received by Friday at 5 p.m. We have four today. Bridget Ann Sheehan Holum. Bridget Ann Holum was born April 5, 1953, and passed away on May 20th at her home in Danville with her family by her side. A funeral mass will be held at 2 p.m. on Friday, May 29th at St. Paul's Catholic Church in Danville. Father John Sire will officiate. Cremation rites will be accorded following Mass, with interment rites scheduled at a later date in Resurrection Cemetery in Danville. A rosary service will be held at 4:30 on Thursday, May 28th, with visitation to follow from 5 to 7 p.m. at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center, and this is located at 3940 North Vermilion Street in Danville. Robert Lloyd Martin, age 46, of Georgetown, passed away at his home on May 15th. A celebration of life will be held at 10 a.m. on Tuesday, May 26th at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center in Danville. Miles Clark will officiate. Burial will be in Sunset Memorial Park, and visitation will be held from 9 to 10 a.m. on Tuesday at the funeral home in Danville. Elizabeth E. Bergen. Elizabeth Libby Ellen Bergen, age 97 of Westville, formerly of Danville, was called home to be with Jesus on Mother's Day, May 10th. A private memorial service will be held for the family at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center in Danville, and burial will be at Sunset Memorial Park. Lyle L. Wright. Lyle L. Wright, 83, of Danville, passed away on May 20th with his family by his side. A celebration of life will be held at 2 p.m. on Saturday, May 30th at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center in Danville. Stephanie Spangler will officiate. Burial will be in Sunset Memorial Park. Visitation will be held from 1 to 2 p.m. on Saturday, the 30th at the funeral home in Danville. Memorials may be made in Lyle's memory to the Alzheimer's Association. And this concludes today's readings of the obituaries. I thought we'd spend some time today honoring those that we will be celebrating on Memorial Day. I always find it hard to find the right words to celebrate those that made the ultimate sacrifice, but I think this editorial kind of nails it in ways that I think we'll all appreciate. The editorial is titled, "A Debt We Can Never Repay." They stand in silent formation, row after row, in perfect order. Birdsong and the wind's whispers serve as the only sounds. They rest now, their mission accomplished. Danville's National Cemetery holds more than 13,000 white marble headstones, each etched with the name and military information for every soldier, sailor, air personnel, or Marine who now lies under the bright green spring grass. From the days following the Civil War to much more recent conflicts, U.S. military men and women find their final resting place here in these 63 acres. The site was first designated a national cemetery in 1898 and moved to its present location in 1901. A large monument in a center circle welcomes visitors. Flowers decorate some of the stones. Others have remained bare for decades. Every one of them, however, share a common bond. They served the United States and helped preserve the liberty and freedom we enjoy today. Not all fell in battle, but each shared a commitment to our nation. Memorial Day's roots trace back to the days after the Civil War, which claimed as many as 700,000 lives, according to some studies. Union General John Logan saw women in the South decorating graves of fallen soldiers and adapted the practice to include Union soldiers. The first official Memorial Day was designated on May 5, 1868. The holiday allows Americans to pause a moment and appreciate the sacrifices made by those in uniform. From the Revolutionary War to today's conflict in the Mideast, men and women have stepped forward to protect the rest of us. Some didn't want to go, but they put aside personal fears out of the commitment to serve the greater good. Their efforts deserve to be remembered, not just on the last Monday in May, but on every day. Every person in a U.S. military uniform has his or her own reason for deciding to serve. But all know the risk, and they step forward anyway. That's an incredible legacy for the rest of us. In his book, An Army at Dawn, about U.S. military campaigns in North Africa during World War II, Rick Atkinson quotes a soldier who knew what could happen. Caleb Milne was a stretcher bearer who died trying to help a wounded soldier just days before the Germans in Tunisia surrendered. Milne's words in a letter he wrote home shortly before his death could serve as a message for all who gave the ultimate sacrifice. How often will you have me near you when wood smoke drifts across the wind, or when the first tulips arrive, or the sky darkens in a summer storm? Think of me today and in the days to come as I am thinking of you this minute, not gone or alone or dead, but part of the earth beneath you, part of the air around you, part of the heart that must not be lonely. We will think of you all this Memorial Day and every day, and we'll remember your sacrifice. It's a debt we can never repay. Thank you all for your service. I know that many of you listeners are also dog owners. There seem to be the most valuable, along with cats. Not to say that cats are bad, but dogs are big family members to homes that have them. And we have a second feature today with the title, "A World Without Dogs is Just Plain Unthinkable." And this comes to us, it's a column by Dr. Richard Elghammer, who writes the column Up Close with Dr. E. Can you imagine a world without dogs? It'd be like this. Gone are the colossal red and white, robust St. Bernard, renowned rescue dogs for those shivering souls trapped under alpine snow. Gone are the elegant bronze, blueback Newfoundland, heroic swimmers who fearlessly plunge into sea storms to save shipwrecked children. Say goodbye to the German Shepherd, Labrador, Boxer, and Collie, who, having fulfilled their first duty to the blind, by being a surrogate site provider, next used their keen minds to rocket the human-dog union into the upper altitudes of deep companionship. Farewell to all the working dogs, the sled dogs such as the Alaskan Malamute and the Siberian Husky, the truffle dogs who sniff out mushroom-like fungus, the police dogs who locate explosives, drugs, and restrain criminals. No more dogs who herd sheep, Pyrenees, Kuvasks, Border Collies, Welsh Corgi, and Australian Shepherds. Hunters, no more bloodhounds, beagles, pointers, or blue tick coonhounds to help you track and tree your prey. The greatest loss by far? A world without dogs would mean that every companion dog, watchdog, or guard dog would disappear. With this disappearance would go one of life's greatest gifts, a child playing with their puppy. Hasta la vista to all puppies, the poodle, the Dalmatian pug, Papillon, Chihuahua, Maltese, Chow, Pomeranian, Toy Terrier. So why am I writing this article? The reason is my memory of the loss of a treasured member of our family. As hard as it is to admit, I've never had such a close relationship with any animal as I had with this 10-pound, 9-inch-high Yorkshire Terrier, my daughter's dog named Roxy. Roxy's coat was silky steel blue with golden highlights on her paws, chest, and face. Her chocolate eyes were lively, vivacious, and contained unlimited affection. But it was her incredible sense of hearing which won me over to her, changing forever my most basic beliefs about dogs. I grew up in a family where dog values, handed down by my mother's farming traditions, were defined by the following criteria: outdoor, big, hunting or guard, watch functions only. The concept of a tiny indoor lap dog was as foreign to me as well speaking French or wearing a kilt. So when my 10-year-old daughter began her campaign for a Yorkie, I resisted. When my son and wife joined my daughter's campaign, I relented, and Roxy joined our family. Here's the story of how Roxy captured my heart. It was a winter day in January. The weather had been terribly cold, 10 to 20 degrees below zero for 8 days. At 2 a.m., I was woken up by Roxy's barking. Was something wrong? I went downstairs to find her in our dining room, looking up at the ceiling, barking nonstop. As I followed her eyes to the ceiling, I spied the reason for her alarm. Water, cascading down the ceilings and walls, was flooding the room. My wife ran to shut off the main water valve, while I went upstairs to rip off the section of wall used to inspect our pipes. The extreme cold had burst the pipe, which brought water to the upstairs, and Roxy had heard the pipe burst, and the ensuing flood caused her to go into alarm mode. Her quick action saved one of the most precious possessions, our library, with all our books, cataloged and organized on bookshelves in the dining room. Roxy's act changed my beliefs about small indoor non-hunting companion dogs, though I still have a Siberian Husky, a Boston Terrier, and a Border Collie. She also taught me how to better understand the heart of children. As a psychologist who on a daily basis deals with life's hardships, I can once again thank Roxy for teaching me this. Every child I meet in my office is asked, "Do you have any pets at home, like dogs or cats?" I write down the names of each pet so I can begin to listen to the unique relationship between children and their furry companions. I wish every child ever born had a chance to feel the energy, joy, and pure delight of a puppy. Roxy lived a full life with us until she passed away at the age of 13. I still miss her every day. Well, thank you for your article. I'm sure all of us that have dogs or have had dogs have stories that we'd love to share. Well, as we're wrapping up the school year, we have a lot of wrapping up of school year activities. So here's a few that might be of interest. Salt Fork softball wins regional, and this comes to us from Marvin Holman. Dateline Villa Grove. In an up and down season for the Salt Fork softball team, the Storm are definitely enjoying the ups. The Storm won an IHSA Class 1A regional championship on Thursday with a 7-4 win over host Villa Grove. Salt Fork has won 7 of its last 9 games, and after a slow start to the season, the Storm has been strong, especially on the road. This year we've been a very good road team, Salt Fork coach Kaylin Leonard said after the team picked up their second win of the season at Villa Grove. They just find ways to win the game. Maybe they just like the bus rides, but it works, and I'm happy it did. It's been an up and down year, but I preach to them that when regionals hit, it's a new season, and we can do whatever we want compared to the start of the season. When we first started the season, we pieced some hits together in a game, Salt Fork pitcher Morgan Russell said, but we've been able to string more hits together, and I've been able to throw those ground balls that Carly as well. Russell got the win on the mound for the Storm with 9 strikeouts and 1 walk, and were able to overcome a tough fourth inning where the Blue Devils scored 3 runs. After Leonard came out of to the mound to calm things down, Russell and the defense was able to hold Villa Grove scoreless in the last 3 innings. After they scored a couple of runs, I knew I had to dial back in and throw ground balls, Russell said. Plays that show the defense can be behind me, and when Coach Leonard came out, she said it was time for us to take a breath. It'd been a long inning, and let's get the outs and get out of here. She's always been a competitor, and I know when she gets on the mound, she's going to do whatever she can for the team, and it's nice to have 2 strong pitchers where I can ride Morgan as long as I want, knowing that Carly McGee is going to come in if she needs to. I'm happy that we didn't have to go to Carly because Morgan did a great job and was able to finish. On offense, Bryland Barnett had a sacrifice fly in the first inning and would hit a single to bring in 2 runs in the third. Kate Wochner hit a home run solo in the second inning and 2 runs brought in the fourth on the double play, and McKee brought in a run in the fifth inning with a sacrifice fly. The team is a good hitting team, and they can piece it together a lot of hits when they get in their groove, Russell said. Today was a team win. We have a lot of defensive plays that could have cost the game if we missed, but they made the plays, and they were there when I needed them to be. The Storm are 18-11 and will travel to Leroy for sectional play on Tuesday. Salt Fork will play either Watseka or top seed Leroy. In track news, Blue Devils roll in sectional. Dateline Bismarck. The first IHSA Class 1A track sectional hosted by Bismarck, Henning, Rossville, Alvin on Thursday was almost like any other meet the Blue Devil boys team this season. The depth of the team and the ability to excel in the field and track events were too much as they won the meet as a team and 13 athletes making next week's state track meet. In the field events, Connor Powell won the shot put with 16.27 meters, while Vance Lane was second in the discus at 47.28 meters and third in the shot put 15.04 meters. And Dylan Davis took second in the long jump at 6.51 meters. Dylan started us off in field, BHRA coach Nathan West said. We changed his run on the long jump to see him hit a 6.5 meter jump is really nice. He got second, and it's going to be important going into state that he got his jump together. Connor and Vince had some great throws, and both of them are going in was nice. In the running events, the Blue Devils won all the relay events and had seniors Gavin High and Mason Cunningham trade wins in the 100 and 200 meter run. I never had all 4 relays get to state in my career, and I took a lot of pride in that, West said. There's a handful of teams that can do it, and it speaks to the quality of kids that we have. High won the 100 with a time of 11.10 to beat out Cunningham's 11.15, while Cunningham won the 200 at 22.45 to beat out High's 22.90. Kyler Perez was third in the 300 hurdles and to also advance to Charleston. The 400 team of Davis Cunningham, Isaac Cahill, and High won in 43.1, while the 800 team of Cahill, Davis, High, and Cunningham won in 1.31.73. In girls track, there's a headline, Danville 4 make girls finals. The Danville girls track team will be going to the gold today at the IHSA Class 2A state finals. Individually, Jemiah Esther will run in the 200 meter final, while Samantha Brown will compete in the pole vault. Esther and Brown will also team up with Yari Shaw and Janai Parker in the 400 and 800 relay events. Some preps softball scores, Mount Zion 11, Danville 0, Prairie Central 5, BHRA 1, Covington 10, North Vermilion 6, and in prep baseball, Covington 7, Danville 1. Well, that's just about all the time we have together today. Let's take a look at our local weather as we head into the week. On Monday, today, as you're listening to this, it's going to be sunny with a high of 82. Partly sunny and warm on Tuesday, high of 83. Wednesday looks like our best chance of rain. A few morning showers, 79 degree high. Thursday, we have clouds and breaks of sun with a high of 81. And Friday, plenty of sunshine and 80 degrees. Gosh, it looks like a great week. I hope you can all get outside. I hope that we have enough rain on Wednesday that's going to keep our flowers watered and beautiful as those are starting to grow and heat and the weather is starting to heat up. This has been Terry Burdick reading to you from the Danville Commercial News. I hope you have a great week, and I'll read again with you soon.